Good afternoon and welcome to the Intrepid Birdman Show. If you caught it previously, don't worry, you can't catch it twice. So, what have we got lined up for you in this afternoon's Intrepid Birdman Show? Well, I was going to read you from my forthcoming book, The Art of Concealment, but I can't seem to put my fingers on it just at the moment. So regular contributors Ellie Dines, Busby Barclay and Alex Wright will read to you from Reuters, stories from England, the Empire and abroad. We have our brand new soap, Vlad the Impaler. We also have a brand new do-it-yourself spot, how to make a dick of yourself in 6 easy lessons. Yes, crime, punishment and detection, just coming up shortly. All in all, another collection of old frolics from the Intrepid Birdman and his guests. Look out particularly for Hilly's Hot Gossip, The Sunday Moan, and Great Moments in British History. Not forgetting, of course, contributions from the world of popular music from this year, last year, the year before, and days gone by. Well, that's what you've got coming up on the wireless this afternoon. For us, it's time to play a record and get stuck into the Sunday joint. That's better. Now, let's play some music. How to Become a Private Detective, Episode 1, How to Make a Dick of Yourself. It may surprise you to know that there are no bar exams for sleuthing, no O-levels in applied clue collating, and no degree in advanced criminal collaring. In short, the private dick is as likely to be an unqualified layman as indeed you are. So what makes him different? How might we bend ourselves to the same task, enjoy his shadowy but exciting world, and make our livings by so doing? Firstly, we must make ourselves a left. Having constructed our lurch, we put it in a place of safety and move on to lesson two, the art of watching people. Much of a detective's work will involve this art to a greater or lesser extent, so we must practice. Let us study the method by going to a place of public access. Firstly, don't stare directly at the subject. It is a known fact that people can feel a stare. After some moments, you may find them staring straight back at you. This can be extremely dangerous and even embarrassing.
Now, just a moment. You're the fellow I saw staring at me earlier. Come here, you little squirt. And let that be a lesson to you.
Better by far to disguise what you're doing by some clever trickery, like peering occasionally over the top of a newspaper or standing sideways on and glancing nonchalantly in the rough direction of your subject.
I can still see you. Now go away.
Another neat trick is to sellotape small mirrors on the inside of dark glasses and then face the opposite direction altogether. But don't try walking around whilst wearing them. Practice hanging around on street corners looking inconspicuous if possible, and watching people going about their business.
Oh, hello, sailor. Do you fancy a quick one?
Public libraries are a good place to practice. Try staring at people through the pages of a book through which you have first bored a hole.
I'm afraid you're going to have to pay for that, Nigel.
It's a good idea to sneak your own readily prepared book into the library.
Sorry.
Try practicing at home, in front of the mirror. Turn out all the lights. Now, see how long you can stare at yourself for without becoming nervous. Practice standing in the shadows. No, not those shadows. I mean, don't walk into the light. You'll find it extremely painful. Cultivate the art of slinking along walls and blending into the darkness. No, not that sort of blending. I mean merging with. Stay with us for lesson two, following people to see where they go.
You again, you horrible little man. What kind of a dick are you?
I'm a private dick. I was just trying to see where you go.
Disgusting.
Are you having a little trouble with him, sir?
I do believe I am, yes.
Just leave us alone for 5 minutes, sir. We know his sort.
Detective, you belong to the parents who I read. Watching the detectives. Watching the detectives. Watching the detectives. Watching the detectives.
Get him now.
We return now to Private Degree Part 2, The Art of Following People. It is important to remember when following people to dress inconspicuously. So loud, bright clothing is out, as indeed is that ridiculous woolly pulley.
Oh, shame.
In order to remain completely inconspicuous in any crowd situation, one should wear the ubiquitous trench coat and wide-brimmed felt hat.
Right.
Pay particular attention to footwear. Loud blickies should be removed from shoes. And shoes should be well worn in to prevent them squeaking. Never wear spurs. It is impossible to sneak up on anyone whilst wearing noisy footwear. Pay particular attention to your breathing. If you have an asthmatic wheeze or a bronchial cough, if you have a dose of influenza, then stay at home until your breathing becomes less audible. It's a dead giveaway. When following a person, be sure not to follow them too closely.
No, sorry.
Or worse still, from too great a distance. Should your suspect suddenly jump into a car and roar off up the street, don't run along in the road behind it. Simply hail down a taxi and shout,
"Follow that car."
Most cab drivers have been dying to hear that line for years and will look forward to it as a challenge to their driving prowess. Once the chase is on, be wary of being given the slip.
Would you mind holding that for me?
Be particularly wary of the old dodge of climbing onto a railway train, then disembarking on the opposite side before the train's left the station. Be particularly wary of public toilets, where your villain may leave by a window unseen. Above all, look out for doorways. Never walk into a door, or more precisely, through a door, without first casing the joint. Having first looked over the building for possible signs of exit, stroll nonchalantly in. But be wary. The trouble with doors is that you never know what you may find on the other side. You may compromise your cover. If so, tell them you're a cabinet minister in search of a young model, then leave by the quickest exit. This concludes Lesson 2. Look forward to Lesson 3, The Subtle Art of Concealment.
Single day.
Private Dickory, Part 3, The Subtle Art of Camouflage and Disguise. Not always are leafy trees and darkened doorways available to conceal our would-be observer. Under such circumstances, our budding private detective must be prepared to construct an elaborate hide in order to conceal himself and observe unseen. So what are the ground rules in the construction of such a device? Firstly, the object that one constructs should be incongruous. It should blend harmoniously with its surroundings. There is no point in constructing an elaborate artificial pillar box and then installing it in the middle of a field of sheep. Obviously, it doesn't fit in. Perhaps less than obvious is the inadvisability of disguising oneself as a sheep under any circumstances.
I say, get off!
Too convincing a disguise could prove embarrassing. Furthermore, it's difficult to tail one's subject when one is in fact being tailed oneself by a herd of sheep. Far better to disguise oneself as something totally inanimate. Why not try rolling around in some cow dung, curling up in a ball, sticking some straw in your hair, and pretending to be a cowpat? Be careful where you do this. It's also a good idea to be exceedingly careful about disguising yourself as something that may be of use to somebody else. Some hides are relatively easy to construct, but have inherent dangers. Never, for instance, in open countryside, disguise yourself as something like, for instance, a bonfire. Never hide underneath a stationary vehicle. One never knows for sure when it may suddenly pull away, leaving one in a desperate situation. Never hide yourself in a bottle bank or dustbin. Remember, discretion is the name of the game. Try not to disguise yourself as anything which may frighten a member of the public. Be aware of other people's phobias. Never disguise yourself as a huge spider, rhinoceros, or herd of stampeding elephants. Never disguise yourself as a traffic bollard, a road barrier, or worst of all, a sleeping policeman. Stay with us for lesson 4, gathering up your tackle, collecting your clues, and making sense of those observations.
Right, Smith, you stay here and keep your eyes peeled, and I'll follow the girl.
My philosophy of life. Do it to him before he does it to you.
Anyone like you. It's not a spark of sentiment or romance or human kindness in your whole body.
What good does it do you besides get you in trouble?
Doesn't seem to be anyone around. I think we're get in your way, you just knock them aside.
I think we're alone now. It doesn't seem to be anyone around. I think we're alone now. The beating of our hearts is the only sound. I think we're alone now. It doesn't seem to be anyone around. I think we're alone now.
Alone now.
The beating of our hearts is the only sound. I think we're alone now.
Alone now.
It doesn't seem to be anyone around.
The Injavid Birdman Show on BLR 101.8 FM. We'll be returning to the program in just a moment. But first of all, it's far more important to bore the pants off you with this staggeringly uninteresting station ID and jingle. Rest assured that if it had some advertising, that would have been here as well. The unacceptable face of modern commercial radio.
We return to Do-It-Yourself Become a Private Dick, Lesson 4, Gathering Up Your Tackle. As anyone who's ever been to the cinema will testify, the private detective is always the first man on the scene, long before the police have arrived.
Damn it, Carruthers, too late again.
Where he discovers the only clue to the perpetrator of the crime, which he secretes in a white envelope dragged from his breast pocket. Always have some to hand.
Damn it, Carruthers, we're too thick to solve this crime. We need a private detective, and we need one now.
The successful detective will also have an old cigarette packet on which to jot some telephone numbers. He should also have the vital credit card or long bendy metal thingy for springing locks with. He requires a pocket handkerchief. This is vital to remove the fingerprints from gun handles and to give to tearful lady clients when they come calling. Large sums of money in small denominations for bribing snitches with, not forgetting the obligatory silver coin to toss in the air and catch.
Sorry!
Don't forget the old-fashioned Polaroid camera with the large flashbulb on top for that compromising photograph. Back at the office, a knackered old desk in a dingy room over a strip joint makes a suitable resting place for a battered Underwood typewriter and an old metal filing cabinet. The filing cabinet should only contain a half-empty bottle of whiskey, an automatic pistol, which is only capable of being fired whilst being cleaned, and a battered angle-poised lamp. It should otherwise be clear of anything resembling files. Stay with us for part 5, Clues and What to Do with Them.
Sweet.
We return to Private Dickory, Part 5. Making sense of clues. The scene of the crime.
Ah, Mr. Tracy. Glad you could make it. I'm afraid our ordinary covers are far too dense to deal with this sort of thing, so we thought we'd call you in as an expert. Tell me, what do you make of this unlikely-looking scene?
The scene in question is the study. The Major lies dead on the floor. Plunged into his back a pair of rusty gilding irons. Blood drips onto a copy of the Ovine Fancier's Gazette, open at centerfold.
We believe he was stabbed to death.
Yes, an easy conclusion to jump to, Sergeant, but perhaps that's what the killer wanted you to think.
You mean you think we've missed something?
I do believe you have, Sergeant, yes. Take a look here, around the neck. Do you notice anything strange?
No.
Where the head should be?
Good Lord, Tracy, it's gone.
Yes.
It's still always fatal.
Quite, but I do believe that this is another red herring.
Good Lord.
Examine this large bullet wound in his chest.
Great Scott, how did we miss that? And these scorch marks, what are they?
I was coming to that, Sergeant. Have you noticed that the body is wet and naked?
Ah.
A nearly always fatal combination where electricity is concerned?
Electricity? And these damp footprints leading to the bathroom?
Which is where I believe the accident happened.
Ah.
I believe the Major electrocuted himself whilst shaving, and then constructed this elaborate ruse to throw us off the scent.
The swine, but why would he do that?
Insurance. The man has a horrible accident and then rigs the whole damn thing to look like murder.
Well, I won't let him get away with it. Perkins, arrest this corpse and charge it with fraud.
Well done, Sergeant.
Thanks, Tracy. Don't know how we'd have cleared this up without you.
My usual fear, of course.
So, as we can see from this scenario, the clues are there right at the very beginning. It's how we apply lateral thinking to the collection of these clues that makes the difference between a successful and unsuccessful detective. So, what are we looking for in the average scenario? Firstly, check the windows and doors for dabs. Look also for bloaters, haddock and kipper, or anything else that may smell a little fishy. Most importantly, look for blood. If you can't find any, look in the shower. The shower is the criminal's favourite place for stashing bodies. Look out for letters in blood scrawled in the victim's own hand on the tiled wall of the bathroom. Or if you get there quick enough, most victims can last just long enough to breathe a final clue in your ear before they peg out.
The geese are flying tonight.
What's that? Sounds like gibberish to me. Man's insane.
Whilst you're in the bathroom, don't forget to check the U-bend for evidence washed down there whilst the evil perpetrator was washing his blood-stained hands. Don't forget also the U-bend of the toilet. It's a very unpleasant job, but somebody's got to do it. Examine the fireplace closely. Nothing is ever completely destroyed by fire. Quite often, a vital clue escapes the conflagration. Don't forget to put the fire out before attempting this. Examine the telephone directory for telephone numbers which have little red rings around them. Look in the rubbish bin and don't forget to look under the bed.
Good Lord, are they still here?
I certainly hope not. They're leftovers from an earlier sketch. Try not to overlook the obvious. Look for anything that is out of place in its current surroundings or that may have been accidentally dropped by the perpetrator of the crime in his haste to flee the premises. Any such clues should be placed immediately in the small white envelope, always kept in the breast pocket, next to the address book cunningly disguised as an old cigarette packet. Most importantly, if there are any pictures hanging on the wall, turn them around and run your fingers across the back of them. There's no reason for doing this, but people expect you to, because after all, that's what detectives do, isn't it? You would be ragged horribly if you didn't do all the right things, so make yourself a nice cup of tea and stand by for lesson six. The subtle art of self-defense.
Somebody's watching me. Now I'm nervous and I shouldn't be. Somebody's got their eye on me. Perhaps I should invite him up for tea.
We saw him smoking by the newspaper stand. There's something odd about his glove left hand. Saw him again inside the old cafe. He makes us tense, we wish he'd go away.
We are detectives. We are select. We are detectives. Come to collect.
Somebody's after me. He left his footprints by the garden tree. Last night when I got home, I got the feeling I was not alone.
Someone is on our tail. We think they're opening up our morning mail. And now each time the telephone rings, we think of frightening things.
The spy is bad.
Do it yourself, become a private detective, part 6, in which we tie up all the loose ends. Firstly, self-defense. No self-respecting private detective is ever overwhelmed by superior weight of numbers when shadowy assassins attack him from darkened doorways. Lesson 1. Buy yourself a gun. Lesson 2. Avoid shadowy doorways. It's asking for trouble. Always attempt to laugh your way out of a situation. Sometimes a joke breaks the ice and makes everybody good friends again. If you don't know any good jokes and you've tried talking, try a kick in the goodies. This works wonders. Then run like the clappers. Another good wheeze is the preemptive attack. When you suspect that you may be attacked by somebody else, get the boot in first. You can always apologize later if you made a mistake. It's very important for any private detective to keep a meticulous note of his movements. No, that's not what I meant. I meant he should take notes of where he's been. No, that's not going to work either. In any case, it's quite obvious that little details are important, so make a note of every one of them.
Just give me the facts, ma'am.
Learn all the phrases associated with detective work. Good command of banter is essential for your street credibility.
Eat lead, sucker.
Above all, remember, practice, practice, practice. That concludes Do-It-Yourself Private Dickery for this week. Look forward to another project next week.
You know your sweet young babysitter, but do you see the things she does behind your back? Nah. You go to parties and to restaurants and balls. She waits behind the curtain in the hallway, watching all the rampant tan and handsome boys go by. She pulls the curtain back a bit, a little more each time. Television, radio, a cassette to seduce you. Orange light or dim firelight, a settee to sit next to you.
Tea or coffee?
Baby's crying. Chocolate cake or biscuit? And then she asks that tired old question, would you risk it? Still, at least she don't molest your baby. At least she don't molest your baby. You know your sweet young babysitter, always sitting serene as an urn, when you to return.
Mm-hmm.
Great Moments in World History.
Episode 2, Columbus Discovers America.
Look, there it is.
Where? I can't see a damn thing.
That big lump of land, look. There.
Oh, yeah. Good Lord.
Next week, Sir Isaac Newton discovers gravity.
But there's still far more to come in this week's show. Alex Wright and Busby Barclay will be along shortly, along with Hilly Dunge, their fabulous hot gossip, the Sunday Moan, Vlad the Impaler, and more.
Here on fabulous VLR 101.8 MHz VHF.
It's crazy, but I'm frightened by the sound.
Looking for clues. This is me, and that's my mate Taffy. And we're doing a great job. A job with a future. You get security, good money, and the grub's really great. You'll meet new people, develop new skills. You can learn to shoot, drive a tank, and even to fly. And the sporting opportunities are unrivaled. Sailing, water skiing, and windsurfing. And you travel all over the world at the taxpayer's expense. If you think it's all peeling spuds and cleaning your boots, you couldn't be more wrong. That's why me and my mate joined the Royal Family.
For more information on how you can join the Royal Family, contact your nearest Royal Family Careers Information Office. You'll find us in the phone book.
Time now for another pointless continuity break while we play another silly jingle. Insert your station ID here.
No, you're supposed to do that.
Sorry, no, we're supposed to have done our one.
Yes, that's right, yes.
BLR, fabulous, BLR.
No, that's absolutely hopeless. Go away.
BLR.
No, I want more
BLR.
Oh, shut up. It's useless.
Time now on the Intrepid Birdman Show to return to the Carpathian Mountains for episode 2 of our weekly soap opera, Vlad the Impaler. Episode 2, Vlad Goes Out to Dinner.
Come on, hungry. I could eat an horse. No, I set them thoughts. I've already had two today. What do we got here then? Franco's Mediterranean Restaurant. Lots of lively atmosphere and folk music. Oh, I know what that means.
Aye, 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 aye.
Shut that bleeding noise up, you miserable git. Waiter, bring on another cabaret. This one's dead.
Oh, Monsieur Dracul, what a pleasure it is to see you.
Oh, come in and bring your lovely wife with you.
Will you stop simpering, you foreign git? Quiet. Service is a bit slow tonight, Franco.
Oh, many apologies, but we are a bit short of waiters since your last visit.
You know, you just can't get the staff these days, can you?
Oh, monsieur, we can get this staff, but we can't get enough of them. Oh, they don't seem to last. What can I get for you?
I think I'll have a kebab.
Oh, a kebab, of course. And for Mrs. Dracul?
Well, I imagine she'll have same as me.
No, dear. I'd rather have something less, well, less sort of impale on a stick, if you know what I mean.
Oh, bloody hell, I knew she was going to be difficult. Ooh. Okay, well, what you got that don't come on stick?
But, monsieur, you specifically asked us to rearrange the menu after the last time you came. We've got skewered lamb, we have got a shish kebab, we have got spit roasted chicken, we've got antelope steak.
Well, that's it, man. Steak doesn't have a spike in it.
Actually, that should be steaked antelope.
Oh, bloody hell.
I think I'll just have a salad, dear.
Bloody rabbit food. Ooh. Come on, waiter, look lively. You've got the order. Ooh. Go and get it.
Would you mind helping me down off of this long, pointy thing, monsieur?
Oh, all right, but hurry up with the food. I've got a busy day.
Very well, monsieur. thank you, monsieur. I will be back in just a moment.
Yeah, right.
Bon appétit.
Bon what? Bloody hell. Poofta. This place has gone right downhill since he took over, I can tell you.
Oh, no! Monsieur! The salad is off.
Oh, yeah, you useless bugger. Get back on that stick. And stop squirming about. Now, I'm really fed up now. I need my cheering up song. Ned, the impaling song, quickly. You on the end of that stick. You accompany him. Go on, get on with it. Always heard the one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all. So don't mock me about when I'm eating out, or I'm nailing it to the restaurant wall. Take it away, Ned.
You always hurt the one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all. You always take the sweetest rose and crush it till the petals fall. You always break the kindest heart with a hasty word you can't recall.
Hit the road, jump song!
If I broke your heart last night, it's because I love you most of all.
Vlad the Impaler will be back with us again at the same time next week when he and the wife visit the family planning clinic.
This song is just 6 words long. 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 Couldn't think of any lyrics. No, I never wrote the lyrics. So I'll just sing any old lyrics that come to mind. Child, you really need words, whole lot of rhyming words. You gotta write so many words, to do it, 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 to do it right, child. This song is just 6 words long. 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 I know that you're probably sore, 'cause I didn't write any more.
just didn't get to complete it. So that's why I gotta repeat it. This song is just 6 words long. 6 words long. This song is just 6 words long. 6 words long. Oh, I make a lot of money. They pay me a ton of money. They're paying me plenty of money to sing this song, child. Much time. I'll throw in a solo, a solo, a solo, a solo, a solo here. This song is just 6 words long. This song is just 6 words long. This song's got nothing to say, but I'm recording it anyway. I know if I put my mind to it, I know I can find a good rhyme here. Oh, you gotta have a music. You need really catchy music. This song has got plenty of music, but just 6 words, child. And so I'll sing them all.
Time flies when you're having such wonderful fun. It goes pretty quickly when you're high on hard drugs as well. But less of that, more of what's coming up still on the Intrepid Birdman Show. Well, somewhere near the end, we got here is fabulous hot gossip as she reads to us from the fascinating diary she keeps on the stars and their many peculiar habits. We have Chris Law with a famous Sunday moan. More of that later. But first, Alex Wright.
My life has been a long one, but nothing matched the sights in Terring Cemetery, said Mr. Fairholm Cox, a retired central heating engineer from Colchester, commenting on his brother's burial. The gravediggers, one of whom had a gold ring in his nose, made the grave too small for the coffin. Several weeping mourners watched the other gravedigger try to bang the coffin into the grave with a spade, and, when they failed, the one with the ring jumped up and down on its lid. I took a swing at him, but missed. Then they both walked off the job, leaving the coffin at 45 degrees. Illustrating what he described as an improvement in the Arcalot district cross-border relations, Colonel Lee Man Sa of the Thailand Frontier Police said, "Yesterday we exchanged 4 Cambodian terrorists for 6 Thai hostages and a car battery." Asked why she had chosen a picture of a ripe tomato as the symbol for the Japanese Socialist Party's election campaign, Mrs. Kazuko Yoshida, the party leader, said, "It will make a stronger impression than a radish." And now some news about pizza from the USA. According to the Rocky Mountain News, a 17-year-old driver delivered a pizza to a mobile home park in Gillette, Wyoming, and, after collecting payment and making change, he urged the customer to have a nice day. The customer responded with one punch to his face and 6 to his stomach. In El Cajon, California, a pizza delivery boy, Kenneth Sordi, was robbed of a pie from Domino's Pizza. A report in the Miami Herald quoted police as saying the pizza was laden with pepperoni cheese and extra onions.
Anybody being offered such a pizza under suspicious circumstances should contact their local police station. This pizza is hot.
Pizza delivery boy Mark Baker, 20, of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Michael Donahue, 30, were bitten in a fight with a would-be pizza thief in a university dormitory. According to the Minnesota Daily, Baker was about to enter Pioneer Hall when a man with a grey ski mask came up behind him and grabbed the pizza. As the thief was running away, Baker managed to trip him and Donahue, who had ordered the pizza, came out to help. The three fought and the thief escaped after biting both Baker and Donahue. However, he left the pizza behind. This story appeared in the Washington Post. A Pizza Hut commercial portraying a condemned man eating pizza as a last meal won't be shown in South Carolina, where condemned murderer Joseph Shaw ordered pizza before dying in the electric chair, a Pizza Hut spokesman said on Wednesday. The ad shows a condemned man ordering a pizza, then, pardoned at the last minute, refusing to give up his pizza. The ad's showing was a mistake, and it probably will get pulled from all markets, a spokesman said. In England and France, associations of people who stutter are trying to get authorities to reduce their telephone rates because their handicap forces them to make inordinately long telephone calls. This story appeared in the Linwood Press. Sheriff's deputies early Sunday morning nabbed a man as he was dragging a complete toilet across the lawn at 11410 California Avenue. Deputies say they stopped Eric Jones, 23, and asked him why he was dragging a complete toilet, tank and all, across the lawn, to which the man allegedly replied, "Who? Me?" Deputies say they searched Jones and found a bottle containing half an ounce of a substance resembling PCP. This story, datelined Nashville, Tennessee, appeared in the Chicago Tribune. A handful of drug and alcohol patients at the State Correction Department's hospital for the emotionally disturbed overpowered two guards and a nurse early Saturday, broke into a pharmacy and took large doses of drugs before being subdued. About 100 policemen were called to the faculty, but the patients were so overcome by the drugs that there was no serious disturbance. According to the New York Times, two gunmen walked into a Brooklyn pharmacy, announced a hold-up and took two employees prisoner. Police arrived on the scene and tried to talk the robbers into coming out, but by then the two men were busy consuming prescription drugs off the shelves. After about 40 minutes, the hostages called the police and said it was safe to come in since the gunmen had both passed out. Los Angeles police said that under the influence of PCP, 27-year-old Walter Murphy burrowed into a hole in the ground and suffocated. Murphy's mother said that her son had begun digging holes 6 months earlier, and that he sometimes stayed in them for weeks at a time. A police spokesman said that Murphy believed he was a gopher. Partygoers in Conover, North Carolina, mistook a bottle of lye for white wine and five of them drank from it, even though the first to take a swig held his stomach and fell on the floor, throwing up. According to the Raleigh, North Carolina News and Observer, his reaction did not stop others from trying it because they thought it was some kind of German wine no one could handle.
And now, gentlemen of the Wine Society, a nice fruity little number from the banks of the Rhine. Yes, it's a Chateau Glycol 57.
Thanks, Alex. We'll be back to you for another stimulating dip into Reuters next week at the same time. But now, a murder mystery drama for radio, written by our own Steve Ryder.
The sign on the door says Dick Malone, private investigator. That's me. But from where I stood, it read, Enolum Skitsiotschnitternotbrieda. It was one of the few things that made some sense in this crazy mixed-up world. Business had been quiet. Too quiet. I was a private eye, thinking of going public. Then I heard the phone ring in my outer office. Well, I knew it was a trick. I don't have an outer office. That's when she walked in. She was a tall blonde. Rather short, with dark hair, but what a woman. She had the sort of figure that would give a monk a dirty habit. So, what can I do for you, miss, huh?
Looking for Dick.
Yeah, well, you come to the right place. She sat on the corner of my desk. She crossed her legs and I crossed my fingers. She was wearing stockings and I was wearing a big smile.
I'm Mrs. Van Driver.
You're a van driver?
My name is Camilla Van Driver.
Camilla Van Driver. You're foreign.
Only on my parents' side. I was born in Switzerland, but I'm actually half Greek and half Dutch.
A Swiss miss with a piece of Greece and a touch of Dutch.
Actually, I'm married. That's why I'm here, Mr. Malone. I think my husband is trying to kill me.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, you see, as daughter of multi-millionaire movie media magnate Michael J. Milton Keynes III, I stand to inherit an awful lot of money when my father dies.
I see, and if you die, the money goes to your husband?
No, if I die, the money goes to the Hollywood Home for Retired Multi-Millionaire Movie Media Magnates, PLC.
Hmm.
My husband can only claim the money if I'm legally declared insane.
And you think your husband's trying to drive you nuts?
Yes, and it's driving me mad. I'm so frightened that I might just end up killing myself. Please help me, Mr. Malone. You're my only hope.
She began to cry. I never could bear to see a woman cry. Pull yourself together. Call yourself a man? Oh, I suppose not. Have a drink. Come on.
Whiskey. On the rocks. And no ice.
Okay, lady. You hired yourself a detective. As I bent down to give her a drink, our lips met. She got up to leave and I pinned her down. She screamed. One of the pins was sticking in her. So where can I find your husband?
Well, most nights he's usually at the Frisky A-Go-Go.
The Frisky A-Go-Go was the sort of place where a man could find solace at the bottom of a bottle or the bottom of a woman. I recognized her husband from the photo she'd given me, Laurie Van Driver. He'd had a rough deal out of life with all the cards stacked against him. He'd owned a few clubs, broken a few hearts, smuggled a few diamonds, and done some gardening, too. Mr. Van Driver?
Who wants to know?
I'm Dick Malone, Private Eye.
Who, your journalist?
Private Investigator. Hired by your wife. Don't you think you've had enough to drink already?
That's okay. I'm drinking to forget.
What?
I forget.
Now, Mr. Driver, your wife seems to think you're trying to drive her insane.
I don't need to drive her insane. You know what women drivers are like. I always knew she was mad.
Uh-huh.
You know, they say a woman's place is in the home.
Right.
So I put her in one. Dr. Krankenhauser's Asylum for the Insane and Music Brothers.
Sure, I'd heard about Dr. Krankenhauser. He had an old string of letters after his name. B-A-M-A-P-H-D-B-L-R. He was a genius. A little eccentric. It was the doctor who came up with a scheme to shorten hospital waiting lists. He wrote them in very tiny, joined-up letters. Camilla had warned me about him.
He's not to be trusted.
You mean he broke the Hippocratic Oath?
No, he's a hypocritical oath.
Ah, Mr. Malone, you wanted to see me.
Doctor, what can you tell me about Camilla Van Driver?
Ah, yes, a fascinating case.
Uh-huh.
I remember like it was yesterday.
You've got to help me, Doctor. It's my husband. He thinks I'm mad, just because I like fried eggs.
But there's nothing wrong with that. I love fried eggs.
Oh, but that's wonderful. I've got a dozen right here in my pocket.
And that was just the beginning. Look. If I were a detective...
I'm a dick, Doc. So, in your medical opinion, this woman's unbalanced?
Yeah. She's as unhinged as a very old door that's fallen off its hinges.
Is that so?
Hello?
It's Malone. I'm at the asylum now, and the doctor seems convinced that you're as nutty as a very nutty thing indeed.
Oh, you must believe me. He's lying. My husband promised him half of the inheritance money if he signed the commitment papers to put me away.
I see. Look, I can't talk now. I'm on the phone. I'll call you back later.
Was that the phone?
No, it was me.
Look, I've been thinking about this whole Van Driver business.
Sure, but what a Van Driver's got to do with any of this?
There's something that you ought to know. Sorry, where was I?
Something I ought to know, huh?
Oh, yes. The fact is...
Dr. Krankenhauser? So, have you got the autopsy?
No, it's just the way these trousers hang.
Uh-huh.
Look, just because I'm your friend who works in the police forensic department and has done you lots of favours in the past,
sure,
doesn't mean you can keep coming in and using me to give you vital bits of evidence that you can use in your detective work.
Uh-huh.
By the way, here's the report on Dr. Krankenhauser you wanted.
Says here, cause of death, you put stabbed through the heart.
He was. Stabbed through the heart with 2 bullets. Here, look at this photo.
Is that you on the donkey?
Sorry, wrong photo.
Oh, well, wait a minute, what's this?
Not another photo.
No, this could be the answer.
Mr. Malone?
Mrs. Van Driver, you better come in. Thanks for coming over. We need to talk.
Really?
Yeah, look, you better sit down. It's your husband. He's dead. Suicide.
Dead? Oh, God, no. But why?
Well, that's the problem, you see. There's one or two things still not right about this case.
Such as?
Well, your husband committed suicide by stabbing himself in the chest, with both hands tied behind his back.
But he left a note. He did leave a note, didn't he?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he did. I have it here. Very nice handwriting for someone who had his hands tied behind his back. The note reads, "To whom it may concern, I can't go on anymore. I know I shouldn't have tried to make Camilla go mad, but it was wrong, and I'm sorry. It's all my fault, and I can't live with the guilt. I'm going to end it all here." And it's signed, "My husband."
He dictated it to me.
You killed him. You're the murderer.
But that's circumstantial evidence, whatever that means.
Sure. And there's something else, too. The police report on Dr. Krankenhauser says that he was shot through the heart with a double-barreled name. Huh. Doesn't that mean anything to you, Miss Camilla Milton Keynes?
I want my one phone call.
You got it.
Andre's Hair Salon.
Camilla Van Driver, née Milton Keynes, was sentenced to life imprisonment at Alcatraz. Was she mad? Was I mad? After all, the money went to the retirement home, although they did offer me a place at 20% discount. Me retire? I'm just doing my job. I'm Dick Malone, private investigator.
A foreign body of evidence was a murder mystery written for radio by Steve Ryder. The cast included Dave Birdman, Steve Ryder, and Chris Law. The whole thing was recorded at the Clockwork Wireless Studios.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on.
Always look on.
It's quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
A piece of spit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Argentinian polo player.
Okay, your husband just decamped with a babysitter. And he's from Norway. Alright, so your team's losing 15-0 at home to Barney. It's not the end of the world, is it? Now come on, cheer up. Moan, moan, moan. That's what people do these days, especially you old people. All you're going to do is sit around and moan as you take your teeth away. Now come on, girls, put the kettle on, have a nice cup of tea. That's it.
Look on the bright side.
Come on, you
too groovy, disc jockey. Better get this rubbish off now.
And now the moment you've not been waiting for. Chris Law speaks from the three bladders as he vents forth his spleen once more in the Sunday Moan.
Detectives, eh? I mean, what about those TV detectives? I find every time you turn on the television, there's another one. Another bloody TV detective. But what about Columbo? You know, I mean, you look at him and you think, who in their right mind would employ a detective with a glass eye and a flasher's raincoat? And Jessica Fletcher in Murder, She Wrote. I mean, when does she have time to write the books? And I'd hate to be a friend of hers. Well, everyone she knows gets murdered. And as for that Inspector Morse, I mean, he's a detective, yeah? He's got a limp. I mean, and you watch that. I mean, what policeman you know drives a vintage Jaguar then? I was watching that last week. You watch it, you think, hang on. I mean, there are more murders in part one of Morse than Oxford has in 4 years. What are they playing at, eh? Imagine booking into a hotel on an idyllic holiday island. You want to relax. It's your perfect holiday, and you decide to go down to the bar for a drink. You get down there, and you find out Hercule Poirot is staying in the same hotel. I mean, you'd check out immediately, wouldn't you? Why are all these detectives in pairs? You know, you got Starsky and Hutch, the Snoop sisters, Macmillan and Wife, the Snoop sisters, Cagney and Lacey, Heart to Heart, the Snoop sisters, the Sweeney and Randall and Hopkirk. I mean, can't they do it on their own? Is that what it is? You know, oh, help me, I've been shot. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't investigate that now. My partner's on the toilet. Do you mind waiting? And what about that Quincy, then? I thought he was a pathologist, yet he acts like a bloody detective. What do they employ him to do? He spends very little time in his lab. How does he keep his job? He's always out being a detective. I mean, you don't see detectives being pathologists, do you? Do you have any idea who killed my sister, detective?
No, but I will have in a minute. I'll just cut her open and have a poke about inside.
I mean, it just wouldn't happen, would it? So I think they ought to sack Quincy. And why is it these detectives are only ever known by their surnames? And they must have Christian names, but nobody knows what they are. No one can remember them. It really, really gets on my nerves. You know, MacLeod, Matlock, Quincy, Starsky, Hutch, Banachek, Columbo, Madigan, Morse, Bergerac, Cagney, Lacey, Callan, Cannon, Ironside, Kojak. Doesn't it get on your wick, eh? And what about those detectives who've got names that nobody knows? You know, the Chinese detective. What the hell's his name? Hello, are you the Chinese detective? I mean, you wouldn't say it, would you? And what was Danger Man's name, or Policewoman, or the Duke, or the Expert, or the Baron, or the Professionals, or Future Cop? Nobody remembers Future Cop, though, do they? And what was the Gemini Man's name, or the Invisible Man, or Hawk, or the Protectors, or the Persuaders? I mean, why don't they have sensible names, like Joe Friday and Sam Saturday? Actually, why isn't there a detective called Mr. Monday? Or Willie Wednesday? And what about that Harry O? I mean, what is the O? Is it Harry O, dear, I haven't got a surname?
And we'll be returning to the Three Bladders for another dose of exactly the same at approximately the same time next week. But now, the ever-lovely Hilly Dines and her fabulous hot gossip.
Many thanks, hot gossipers, for sending in your views on Mrs. Geldof's Big Breakfast TV show. Not only has it been described as a tacky cross between Tiswas and Funhouse, but to add to the embarrassment, rumours abounded that the Geldofs were accused of licence dodging when visited by a DTI detection team. Bob's new image is less scruffy, but still as colourful. And who are those other awful presenters? Talking of children's favourites, Orville the Duck is appearing at rave parties, plugging a song claimed to be about the killer drug ecstasy. Ventriloquist Keith Harris and his puppets star at the parties, where a new version of Orville's 10-year-old song, I Wish I Could Fly, is a hit with acid house ravers. On the controversial remix by the group DWA, Orville chants, I wish I could fly, and repeats the letter E. He says, E, look at me, I'm flying. And a voice urges, come on, come on. MPs and doctors want the song banned, but 45-year-old Keith insists, I know some people are going to say it's all to do with ecstasy, but honestly, it's not. I'm not promoting using drugs, I just want to go out there and waggle my duck, he says. Distributors Reverb Records said, Keith isn't encouraging kids to take drugs, it's just fun. If anything, it's Orville's fault. The duck is a bad influence on Keith. It should be in the Betty Ford Clinic. In my opinion, so should Keith Harris, actually. Liz Taylor has landed a part in the smash hit telecartoon The Simpsons, but she only says one word, and that probably cost them about $5 million. The Oscar-winning actress utters baby little Maggie's first word, Daddy. Viewers will see the cartoon tot spit out her dummy and speak in the superstar's distinctive tones. Liz, who's 60, spent several hours at the Hollywood studio recording her part. She will be heard in the new series, which starts on Sky next month. A spokesman for the show said, "We're delighted she did it." Liz is, of course, the latest in a string of celebrities to lend their voices to the cartoon characters. Others have included Michael Jackson, Ringo Starr and Madonna, who played Bart's girlfriend. Danny DeVito played Bart's uncle in one episode. Director Roman Polanski turns on the shock treatment in the passionate but quite perverse Bitter Moon, Certificate 18 in the West End. This compulsive movie revolves around a couple whose affair is triggered by the most intense sexual chemistry in order to keep their appetites satisfied in a relationship seemingly destined for disaster. They go far beyond the boundaries regarded as normal. Polanski, unconventional at the best of times, takes us to the limit and beyond. His wife, Emmanuelle Senior, plays the young dancer Mimi, who has a bizarre relationship with middle-aged American writer Oscar, played by Peter Coyote. Their obsessive story is told in graphic detail as they sail merrily along on an ocean liner. This film may be a shocker, but as well as being very sexy, it's also very funny. If you want to witness the extremes of passion, sex and jealousy, don't miss it. After Four Women, with its sad, sad shaved pubes and abundance of smeared ice cream and industrial oil, comes Ludus, more like a ballsy Cosmo than a toned-down playgirl with its no-bullshit approach to sex and sexuality. It'll have imaginative images of men and their bodies, explorations into sex education and sex therapy. Ludus is a new magazine strictly for women, with their eyes set on the newsagents' mid-shelves. Step aside Bugs Bunny and make room for fluffy-tailed but foul-mouthed, kitted out with size 24 docks and long floppy ears, Bastard Bunny. It is not only the ultimate rude boy rabbit, but he's also the best thing to happen in British indie comics for ages. Issue 3 is out now, price £1.50, and features street-level surrealism, rude words, ALF tendencies, and the view from the queue for Love Ranch, and lots of rodent sex. It's totally unmissable. In a week where the American Navy shoots itself in the foot again, David Miller retires from office to spend more time sucking feet, and while the rest of the country tries to stay on its feet, look out for the new Foster's ad, which is a parody of Haagen-Dazs and its yuppie sex fantasy obsessions. Well, that's it from the Gossip Column. I'll see you next week.
See you next week, Hill. Gosh, we've run out of time. Just time for the Ovaltinis and then we're off.
Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye. Cheerio, here I go on my way. Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye. With a cheer, not a tear, make it gay. Give me a smile I can keep all the while in my heart while I'm away. once again, you and I. Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye.
All together.
Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye. Cheerio, here I go on my way.
Goodbye.
Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye. With a cheer, not a tear, make it gay. Give me a smile I can keep all the while in my heart while I'm away. Till we meet once again, you and I. Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye.
Amblin's afternoons plunge into the depths of ever poorer taste. The intrepid Birdman played the records. Chris Law played the fool. And Alex Wright and Busby Barclay played for time. And Hilly Dines played the field. Steve Ryder played with his word processor. But more of that when he finishes the therapy. Chris Law is now appearing in What? No Kitchen Ceiling at the Acton Small Claims Court. The entire cast will reassemble at the fire point at the same time next week, so look forward to seeing you then.
Give me a smile I can keep all the while in my heart while I'm away. Till we meet once again, you and I. Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye.
Say goodbye, Ovaltinis.
Another happy Ovaltine.
Yes, thank you very much.
Make one of ours.
Yes, I thought so too. I wonder if you wouldn't mind declaring war on us. I think it might be safer in the end.